Empire.
Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Show with D. Mindy, Lil Cheesecake, and Doc starts now.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome in for episode of the Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Show, a proud member of Empire Media and the Empire Media Podcast Network. D. Mendy here, joined by a man who lives by who lives his life by four letters. That's V-O-L-O. It's Eric Mendelson, a.k.a. The Doc. What's going on?
You know, that spells Volo, and some people make songs about Volo, and they're not me. But they're on this podcast, so that can only be one person.
Yeah, maybe they'll never hear it, but it's funny because people won't ever get to see this. It's not on YouTube, and they can't see it on the podcast. Your face that you just gave me when I read that, which is freaking hilarious.
But, like, you know, what people really can see is I do have the video of David singing it on my phone. So if you really want it, send me a DM on Twitter, and I'll make sure I send it to you.
I don't think anybody's sending you a DM on Twitter. I don't think
I hope one person. I hope one person does, so that way I can ruin your reputation.
I think more people will be impressed with my creativity, if I'm being honest, but
people already know you're creative, David. That's a given. I don't give out compliments like that to you, but you are a creative guy. But this is just embarrassing.
People just need to know that you run Volo, that you are a Volo man. You are taken because you're married to Volo.
I'm married to the game.
You're married to Volo. You're married to the game. You're married to repping and being there for Todd, being there for the entire Volo crew when you guys do your nights out. It's cute. Okay. Anyway, people don't care about you and your relationship.
I hate you, David.
With Volo. We are here to talk about a very important subject today. And that important subject is our victory laps and losses. So now that the 2021 season is officially in the books, the regular season anyway, we can now sit back in our easy chairs, put our feet up, and we can decide, hey, were we right on these guys? Were we wrong on these guys? Can we take our victory laps like Forrest Gump, maybe huff and puff a little bit? Or are we going to take our L's, admit where we were wrong, and be kind of like a Doc in a sense to get a lot of these decisions not too right here? So it's going to be a lot of good discussion and a lot of hindsight analysis here. But obviously, we can kind of look at our processes and look at our decision making and kind of assess kind of where things went right, where things went wrong with our player analysis with these particular individuals. And of course, we need a big gun in here without Mr. Cheesecake on this episode. So we brought in Mr. Scott Chu, who is one of the best analysts in the game. So make sure you stay tuned for that. After we go to our bullpen for our question of the week, if you played in the big leagues, what would be your three pitch mix? And our game of the week coming in to shut the door. So if you guys are ready to get another episode started, then man, we're here to do it for you. Let's do it! Yeah!
That was weak, David. That was weak sauce. Volo Eric does not approve.
Some days the let's do it doesn't come out of me like I want it to. Some news and notes here. Red Sox took down the Yankees in the first wildcard game 6-2. The Dodgers won on a walk-off 3-1. So both wildcard teams have been set. Dodgers are now set to face the San Francisco Giants. And the Red Sox are now set to face who, Doc?
The Rays.
There you go. Rivalries. We love the rivalries. It's these division rivalries to start off the divisional round, which is great stuff. Doc, do you, I believe, wasn't the Blue Jays one of your picks?
Oh, yeah. They were my pick to come out of the AL, and now I lost $10 because they're not making it to the World Series. But I swear, had they gotten in the playoffs, they would have made it to the World Series.
I believe you on that. I was really annoyed when they couldn't get in. Obviously, they won, but the Red Sox and Yankees won. And the Red Sox won the they were down 5-1 to the Nationals on the last day of the season.
Swear the Nationals threw that game.
They had to because it was ridiculous. Like, I was like, are we going to have a playoff between the Blue Jays and Red Sox? And everybody would have loved to see that. It didn't happen. Very disappointed. Let's talk about the San Diego Padres. who are now apparently focusing in on Marcus Stroman as part of a preliminary discussion as a target this offseason. They also, in the meantime, have fired their manager, Chase Tingler. The former skipper was offered a chance to stay with the organization in another role, but he went 116-106 in 2 years with the organization. Doc, do you think Stroman with the Padres would be a good move, or do you think that it's one of those guys, they bring him in there, maybe he's not quite what you hope he would be, and they should go with a younger route?
I mean, I think he's going to be an upgrade, but they already have a good rotation. Like, you know, Chris Paddock is maybe a 4 or 5. Blake Snell, you hope, is better. Mike Clevinger should be coming back from Tommy John surgery. So if you're looking for pitching, I mean, they traded for him last season knowing that he was probably going to be out this year. I'm not as big on Stroman. He relies a little too much on ground balls, and I don't like depending on that year to year. I'd much rather do an in-season trade if things aren't going well to begin the year. But if you can get him for cheap in the offseason and the Mets are willing to deal him, why not?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see with him with a really good offense. I think he wants to stay with the Mets, but we'll see how that plays out. The Colorado Rockies announced that they've signed a 5-year contract extension with right-hander Antonio Senzatella, guaranteed $50.5 million in a club option for the 2027 season. They're also keeping their first baseman in the fold, announcing they've re-signed CJ Cron to a 2-year pact, $14.5 million. CJ Cron, by signing there, I think now kind of creeps into the top 10 first baseman for next year down he's staying in Colorado. So I do like that move for him. I don't think I would have offered Senzatella that much money in that many years. Obviously looked better. This was the best year of his career, but he is not somebody that I'm super impressed with. Doc, you shaking your head as well, so it doesn't seem like you are either.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't get the Rockies. Like, you trade away your best players, and then you decide to sign Senzatella to an extension, a guy that 2 years ago had a 6.71 ERA and is going to be in cores. Like, I feel like you would build around hitting. I don't know. Everybody thought Trevor Story was going to be gone at the All-Star break, and they ended up keeping him. Like, why trade Nolan Arenado then? Like, if you're not selling the farm, why did you get rid of your best player? I just don't get it.
Nolan Arenado for Austin Gomber.
Pretty fair deal.
Yeah, that's a freaking joke.
Oh, Nolan Arenado and $50 million for Austin Gomber. Don't forget the money.
Yeah. What a joke. Honestly, I'm a Rockies fan. I don't know. I would have to... don't think I've ever switched teams. And, you know, I've been very loyal to the teams that I like. But if I was a Rockies fan, I think I would finally be at the breaking point. Especially Trevor Story is not coming back there. He already said he's not coming back. He's not re-signing with them. And honestly, I don't know what you're doing if you're a Rockies fan.
I just think it's so funny. Like, Jeff Bridich isn't the GM anymore. But just like that philosophy of, oh, I went to Harvard, I must be smart and I know better than you. Like, the school you went to doesn't translate how you do as a general manager. Like, sometimes I think we overthink these things, that somebody's resume or their educational background is going to make them good in another position. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. Adam Wainwright, who the Cardinals that were just eliminated in the playoffs in the wild card round, they've announced they're bringing him back for the 2022 season at $17.5 million. So he's going to, maybe this might be his last year. He's going to turn 40 at the end of August next year. And obviously this year, to kind of turn back the clock a little bit, 206 1/3 innings and a 3.05 ERA, the fifth best mark he's notched in a full season. Maybe he's trying to go out with Yadi Molina in the sunset. He's already announced next year is his last year. But I think that's a great move by the Cardinals. And he really has changed his game, going a lot more off speed than he used to. And it's really worked out well. So I think it's a great move on both sides for a Cardinals legend. Maybe I'll have his number retired by them too, but great move for them. And Max Muncy, who injured his wrist during the last Dodgers game of the season at a collision on first base, he did not play in the wild card game. And right now, unless the Dodgers make a deep run in the postseason, he's not expected to play for them at any point in the near future. Big hit to their lineup, obviously, as Muncy was having one of the best years of his career. And you got to think that if the Dodgers, for some reason, can't get to the World Series, that would be a big part of why they're not getting there. That's a big bat they're missing in their lineup. Anyway, if you enjoy hearing about Volo City and the Doc's endeavors, then make sure you subscribe to the Triple Play Fantasy podcast and all the great things going on the Triple Play Fantasy Network. We've got our football and basketball podcast, along with this baseball one, of course. Also, our shows like the Super Fantasy Bros, Between the Seams with Marty and Mac, and the Tripwire. Of course, if you just check out the YouTube channel by itself, there's shorter content there with Coach's Corners, Fantasy Foodies, Movie Minutes, and much more. And if writing is more your style, you can go to tripplayfantasy.com for all the great articles from our talented writers. Mr. Marty Tallman, one of the heads of our fantasy baseball department here, actually wrote an article on Randy Arozarena that dropped today, so you can check that out. Of course, make sure you stay in all the know-how by following the social media account at tripplayfantasy on Twitter. When you think about the United States of America, you think about three B's: big business, big belt buckles, and building fantasy baseball rosters. Now, the amount of arrogance people have for the latter could make non-fantasy baseball players who are tired of hearing this want to move to Atlantis. If you're looking for good, wholesome fantasy content that won't drive your significant other away, look no further than Triple Play Fantasy, and that's no cap. All right, we're going to jump into our victory laps and losses with Scott Chu right after this. Oh, heck yeah. Fantasy baseball talk on a Thursday night. Nice, cool October night out here. Can't beat that.
Yeah, who cares about football?
Yeah, it's not like we have it on our in our background on our TV or something like that right now. It's fantasy baseball time, baby. Of course, every Thursday night, you know, we're here. Myself, the doc, who just came with his from his barber. Nice little fresh haircut for those with the YouTube right there. How are you feeling with the fresh cut? Was there something planned this weekend you wanted to show it off, or what was the occasion?
You know what? Just like the hair was getting too long, my confidence was down. Like when you wake up and your hair is too long, you don't feel good about yourself.
How are you feeling on a 10? Are you feeling like a 10 right now?
I'm not feeling like a 10, but I'm feeling like an 8, which is good for a Thursday night.
There we go. Okay. I like that. Well, we're talking about hair. This guy's might have some of the best in the industry, but that might be the least of the things that we're going to talk about with this gentleman. We welcome in a man that is the master of two different types of curling: the mustache and the sport. He's a writer, podcaster, and manager for Pitcher List, a baseball podcaster for Fantasy Benefits, and the creator of Fantasy Curling. This twin uses his charm, good looks, and brain to set himself above the ranks among various fantasy baseball personalities everywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, we reached out to him and said, we want Chu. It is the mustache himself, Scott Chu. What's going on, man?
I mean, I'm doing great. I feel bad. The mustache is gone because I owed my wife some favors, and that was the last piece of collateral I had. Like, it was the last thing in my back pocket to be like, I want to do this stuff. And she's like, well, that's got to go. And like, I literally looked for every other negotiating tactic I had. They were all worthless. So the mustache had to go. It was very sad.
So she's not a fan of the facial hair at all.
No, she likes this thing, whatever you want to call it, that I have going on the side, my little leprechaun strap here. But the mustache was not her thing, because like, you know, she'd every once in a while she'd feel like kissing me, and it like got in the way, and it made me laugh. She hated it.
Oh,
so no. What are you doing for November? Are you like getting the Movember mustache? Like, is it gone?
Good
for
thing
facial hair gone for a while.
Oh no, I'm going to grow it back. She just doesn't know that yet. And then what's nice about it is it's the gift that keeps on giving, because it'll be collateral again once it gets long enough, and I can use it as a bargaining chip.
See, I like that. Oh, okay. I like that. And so it's like resets pretty much. After you shave it, you can use it again the next time, every single time that you need to negotiate with her.
Yeah, I just need her to be gone for like a couple of days so it can start. And then like, it doesn't grow super fast. So like, she doesn't really notice until it's there. And then she's like, what happened? I was like, I don't know. It's just here now.
I love it. Speaking of someone whose wife doesn't like when I grow any facial, not that it ever grows to the mustache like you have, but when I just shaved, and when it gets like a little scraggly, she has a razor in the bathroom and she always points to it. She's like, all right, it's time. So I totally get that. I love
I'm going to start referencing that whenever I see your wife next.
There you go. You could do that. But of course, facial hair, nice head of hair, all that good stuff. That's fun to talk about. Before we dive into the fantasy baseball topic at hand, Scott Chu, I got to ask you, I read your fantasy curling article. For those that have not read it, can you explain what fantasy curling is?
Yeah. So I guess I'll start the story. My hometown of Kalamazoo, Michigan, hosted the national championships for curling, the U.S. Nationals, to, you know, choose the team that, you know, best in the country. And had there been Olympics on that year, they would have competed for the Olympics. and I went to it. I had never really seen curling before, except for like everybody's reaction to curling, which is like, oh yeah, the thing with the brooms, yeah, that's cool. And like we watch it every Winter Olympics, right? Because it's like they did the math. It's like 70% of the Winter Olympic broadcast coverage is curling, because it's one of those things that you just have on in the background. It's like that little dive bar in your hometown that's always got bowling on somehow. Like, that's how curling works during the Winter Olympics. So we go there, me and my buddy from work, and we have an awesome time, right? Because the game is, like, difficult, but ultimately it's kind of simple, right? It's, like, a mix of, like, bowling and bocce ball on ice, right? Like, you're trying to get some 40-pound rock to stop at a certain point, and you slid it on ice, which is, like, really hard. But it was really cool to watch, a lot of fun. And I was like, man, there's got to be a fantasy game of this, right? Like, it was February at the time, so I'm like deep in fantasy baseball mode. I'm like, there's got to be a fantasy version of this game. I go and look around on the internet, and all they have is Pick'em. And hey, I like Pick'em, but that's not fantasy, right? Like, that's different. That's just like Pick'em. That's not fantasy. So I was like, we got to find a way to do this. And curling is largely Canadian, so luckily the curling community is really, really friendly, right? Because it's a bunch of Canadians and some folks from the U.S., lots of clubs in the U.S., but they helped me come up with a DFS-style game, because with curling, like, there's a season, but it's not like they schedule games like they do in baseball or basketball or football or anything like that. It's just a bunch of random tournaments. It's more like golf. So we had fantasy curling is DFS-style contests. You have a salary cap of 40,000. All the events run men and women's, and it was really important to me that we always have the games include both at the same time. I didn't want there to be this thing of, well, you guys don't cover the women's, or you don't cover. No, I didn't want any of that. I wanted them together at the same time, because that's how they play. Put them together, and you have to pick three men's teams, three women's teams, and you get points for how well they do in each game, because it's a tournament, and you also get points in for how well they do in the tournament, right? And it's sort of like the World Cup. There's a pool play, and then they move on to a tournament at the end. So that's how it works. Really, you get to pick teams. I got to know a lot of pro curlers. One of my favorites, a guy named Colin Hodgson. He's awesome. He helped me. He did a podcast with me. We got nominated for an FSWA award, actually. Best all awesome. Sports podcast over at Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And that was one of the submissions we did for that. So it was really cool. And it's one of those things too, where you don't really have to know anything, right? Like, a lot of when I started it, I made this game and I thought I'm going to get like 25 people. Like, I'm going to beg Justin Mason. I'm going to beg some folks at Pitcher List, and we're just going to do this. And we got 250 people because like Canadian Twitter picked it up a little bit and, had all these people, but you don't really have to know anything. You just have to like, you're like, oh, hey, I'm going to pick this team because they're from, I'm part Swedish, so I'm going to pick the Swedish team. Or, you know, I'm in the U.S., I'm going to pick the U.S. teams. Like, my last name is Chu. I'm a quarter Korean. My grandfather was Korean, from Korea. So I picked the Korean team. They didn't do super well. And I'm actually really bad at fantasy curling, it turns out. I'll even do the research. I'm just terrible. But it's a lot of fun. And it's one of those things that you don't really have to know anything. You just pick some teams. And most importantly, above anything else, just like every fantasy sport, another reason to watch the sport, right?
That's
just something
right.
else to root for. It's a reason to, you've got two teams playing that are probably not going to compete for the championship. Why would you watch that game? Because you maybe got some, maybe you got some fantasy investment in that game. You've got one of those teams. That was really like the best part for me, because I didn't have a lot of rooting interest in curling, right? So I gave myself some. And finally, what's really fun, the pro curlers play. Like, they play fantasy curling, and they get to pick themselves in the tournament. It's wild. One of them actually won. Like, a guy that was in the event, like a pro curler playing in the tournament, played fantasy curling and won. So we had to turn down the prize because of like some weird.
Oh, that stinks.
But it was wild. I mean, I know that's more common in football and stuff, but you never hear about that in other sports. I just thought it was cool.
The pioneer, man. You're a pioneer. Honestly, like, you hear the sports that everybody talks about, but fantasy curling, you're the man behind it.
I would join a league for fun.
Are you going to be able to draft yourself at some point? Because it sounds like you play.
No, that would not only will I never compete at that level, that'd be a terrible idea. Like, there are not a lot of points in this man's curling, right? Like, it's just not where it comes from. And really, the beauty of it is you don't even have to do a league, right? You just can play for the one tournament. They take like 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you only pick right in the beginning. It's sort of like best ball that way. You pick your teams and then you just watch. You don't have to do roster maintenance throughout. because it's supposed to be about watching it. You know, I didn't want to have to make people do a lot of stuff. And I'm not a coder, so I had to rely on the good people at Curling Zone, which is sort of the FanGraphs of curling, who helped me set up the game and got all the stats loaded and everything. So we're going to have it for the Olympics. So keep your eyes open. We're going to have fantasy curling for the Olympics so that you have something to root for while you are half asleep and curling's on TV.
I love it. I love it. This is more curling talk than I've done in my entire life in the last 5+ minutes. So I'm here for it. When it comes around, I think Doc and I are definitely going to look more into that. The last thing I want to ask you about, because this just popped in my head before we dump into fantasy baseball, and I promise it's coming after this. You are the man behind the analyst cards that you... and I would be remiss if I didn't bring that up, because the analyst cards are just fantastic. And you were nice enough to make one of me. And
I loved it.
They turned out more incredible than I could imagine. Shout out to Yancey for the image that he sent you.
Oh, yeah.
But how did you get the idea for those?
Honestly, like, I like collecting baseball cards. In fact, I have a bunch of like loose ones here on my desk that just came in the mail, like this nice little Tarek Skubal that I just got. I'm a big Skubal guy. But I was just thinking, and I originally made one for my two bosses over at PitcherList. I made one for Alex Fast and Nick Pollock because I found some like mildly embarrassing old photos of them on the internet. And I was like, oh, well, I got to find a way to embarrass them even further. I can't just post it in our Discord. Like, that's lame. So I went to tops.com and they had a custom card creator, and then I made it. And then I about slapped myself in the face because I work regularly with one of the best graphics guys in the game, Justin Paradis.
Yeah.
And like, what was I doing? So he designed your card. That's why like your card is like this top shelf, like fully designed. It's beautiful. And if any of you are I don't remember. Are you going to First Pitch Arizona?
I really wanted to, but I wasn't able to go.
I can't go either. But if any of you run in to David at any point in real life, you need to ask him for that card. He's got them. He has them. I don't know what he's done with them, but he's got them.
I have them over in my kitchen, actually. They're sitting in my bowl. I have them like set out. I was like, hey, you know what? If I ever need someone, be like, you know what? There's a guy out there named Scott Chu who is a whiz, along with Justin Paredes, who can make an insane card. If you want this, I'm a nobody. If you want this, hit up Scott Chu because he is the freaking man.
David, you know what you should do when you have your first trick-or-treater? Give them that and see their reaction.
There you go.
Make sure it's autographed in like a silver marker too. Like a big fat bold point, like silver Sharpie, like really gaudy.
And make sure you're doing the same pose as in the card.
I don't even remember. I haven't even done that pose, I think, since I did that one picture. It's been a long time. But I mean, it blew me away, honestly. And it was just fantastic. I can't thank you enough for picking me. I think you've only done like 4 or 5 of them, right?
Yeah, we had to table it for a little bit because we got busy, but I'm hoping over the winter we can pick it back up. We got a couple more. We got some really nice pictures of Paul Spohr from his girlfriend.
Oh, yes. Oh,
we have Danielle Salinger.
We got
a really nice pick of her from Justin, and we got a couple others. So we want to put those together and have some fun with that.
Soon enough, it'll be like a full 52 card deck, and then you'll sell them as the 52 card deck, and people can do like drinking games or something with the 52 cards. I mean, that'd be kind of cool, right? Like,
yeah, I have all 4 that have been printed, and I have autographed versions of almost all of them. I don't have Nick's, but Nick and Fast got to keep theirs because they only got each other's card. But I have yours autographed, and I have Justin Mason's autographed. I don't know if you guys saw Justin Mason's, but
it's fantastic.
In terms of raw sex appeal, it's like yours and Justin's are just like this. they are close, man.
Oh, man, it's fantastic. If you ever get a chance, hit up Scott. And if you haven't seen the cards, make sure I'm sure you have like pictures of them that you can show them. You got to see these cards, man. They are just mind boggling. And if you're subscribed to the YouTube channel, the man's got them right there. So you can check them out on this channel live streaming right now.
You got like a binder full of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Would you not? Right?
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Gosh.
That's beautiful.
That's fantastic.
Oh, David, I never say this, but you're sexy.
Oh, my God.
But Justin, I mean, this is a close second. This guy right here.
That overtakes David.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was beautiful, and it's got that great Roto wear, like in the top corner. It's that like that dumb Justin face as like where the team logo would be. My camera won't focus on it, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful, and I have Nick's and Alex too, but I won't use more of your time just showing you my personal collection of cards. Most of these are baseball players, but I had to have those.
This might be a record that almost 15 minutes into the segment, we haven't talked any baseball yet.
That's fine. You know what? I'm here for it because technically it's the playoffs off season as far as fantasy is concerned. So it's good to get a little weird, a little fun. We will dive in now. We're going to have to look back because, fellas, we're talking victory laps and losses. So as many of you know, many like to take their victory laps maybe a week or two in the season. Someone hits a couple home runs or someone pitches a shutout and everybody's already counting their winnings before it even happens. So now that the season's finally over, we can sit back and actually reflect which players we got right, which players we got wrong. Was our processes incorrect or did it not turn out as we expected? So there's going to be a lot we can kind of break down now that we can kind of sit back and look at everything as it went down in the full 162. So starting off with our guest, Mr. Scott Chu. Let's be positive here. Let's talk our victory laps now that we can do them. This is permission for you to go all Forrest Gump right now. Who did you talk about in the off season that ended up delivering this season?
I'm actually going to talk about two guys at the same time because me and some of my colleagues, Steve Gisili is one, and Ben was the other, and we made this thing called MATH, right, which is mechanical adjustments. And I can't even remember what the acronym was, but we basically made this big tracker of all the offseason changes. Every time a news article came out about guy tweaked his swing, guy lost weight, guy, looked at tape and changed something or changed his stance, whatever. We logged them and some of them really stood out. The two that stood out to me that I made sure I invested in drafts. Number one was Avi Garcia. Avi Garcia lost like a ton of weight in the offseason. It's worth noting that in 2020, he was the starting center fielder for the Brewers. He weighed 280 pounds.
Was he that heavy?
He was 6'4", 280 pounds. That's Frank Thomas. He was Frank Thomas, but playing center field.
That's nuts. I had no idea he was that big.
Yeah. It's wild. And if you look at the pictures, you start to notice that he was enormous. Not like super chubby or anything. He's just so big. He's like football lineman big, right? So he loses all that weight, and he's always been a guy who can make really, really hard contact. He's got some speed. I was like, man, he can unlock a little more of that now that he's not carrying like 40 extra pounds. I think it ended up being like 50. He lost a ton of weight. That was awesome. And then, of course, the obvious one was Cedric Mullins. He was one of the first guys we added to that. He started swinging only from the left side. And look, not every change that happens, not all of these mechanical adjustments work out. If you go and look through that list, there's all kinds of guys on there that like nothing came of it. Right? Like, real quick, like Paul DeJong, he like tightened up his stance. Didn't matter. Right? Mm-hmm. Jackie Bradley Jr., started using the whole field more and it didn't matter. Right? Like a lot of this stuff didn't matter, but that like some of these really big ones can stand out. And Cedric Mullins and Avi Garcia were the two that first came to mind where it's like, man, they made huge changes either to how they're approaching hitting, right? That's Cedric Mullins. He's only focusing on the left side. We already knew he had speed. He just needed a way to unlock more of that. And he got kind of lucky early on and that playing time opened up, right? Because Austin Hayes got hurt. He got opportunity to start. And then, of course, with Avi Garcia, it's like a guy who's always had some talent, has shown flashes, and now he's got his body back, right? Like, Vlad Guerrero's another guy who lost a bunch of weight, looked more fit, and it turned into something, right? But Avi was like even more because you didn't even really have to draft him in like Yahoo leagues, right? Because you only had three outfielders. You got to pick him up. So those two guys together are just, based on those early season things, you latch onto the ones that you think are going to work, and they did. Yay!
Well, I think you also need to, like, I know everybody associates Justin Mason with Cedric Mullins, but we got to get your name out there too, because
Can I get in on that also?
Oh, no, I'm not including you in that group.
Okay.
But I think
I did take him in TGFBI.
I'm happy for you, but
thank you.
So, but yeah, I mean, Cedric Mullins, 30 season, and I mean, yeah, I obviously had no idea that Avisio Garcia was that heavy. Now, did you project the type of season that he was going to have, or did you just think he would have a better year?
You know, he's a really weird guy, right? Because he's this super hard contact. He hits a ton of ground balls, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, he hits these absolute missiles, between the third baseman and the shortstop over and over. I mean, he's like, he was second place for the batting title one year, right? Behind Jose Altuve. He has these crazy BABIP fluctuations though, based on how well, like how locked in his swing is and how fit he is, to be quite honest, because he's huge, right? Like we talk about having compact swings and quick to the ball. That's hard for guys that are big. Like, you know, we see Aaron Judge is able to do it. Giancarlo Stanton's able to do it. Avi Garcia can do it, but not at 280 pounds, right? He's not that kind of swinger. So, I thought he'd do better. And I knew that, like, it's hard to, I didn't project this. I knew there was sort of upside like this. I can't say I picked him in every league, or can't say I never dropped him in a league or whatever based on circumstances, but that upside was always there because he's just really, really athletic. If you have to think way back to when he was a Tiger, they called him Little Miggy, right? Like, it's easy to be little compared to Miggy, even though he's a giant, but like he was Little Miggy because he was this big physical specimen that was really, really athletic for his size.
Yeah, and it really turned out well. I mean, people thought also he'd be in a platoon with that Brewers outfield, and he ended up just taking the job and playing every day when he was healthy, and really helped out your fantasy team down the stretch there too. Just with, again, he had over 30 home runs this season, didn't he? Did he reach the 30?
He finished with 29 and 8 stolen bases, and was a top 25 outfielder in most formats.
Yeah, I mean, again, fantastic return from Vicio Garcia. Doc, who were some of the players that you want to make sure that people know that you called before the season started?
So should I give you one of them or both now?
You just go ahead and give me both.
Okay. So the first, I'm going to beat it into the drum. It's Chris Bassitt.
That's not the expression.
All right. I'm going to, what is it? You beat? I don't know, whatever. Chris Bassitt. Everybody said in 2020, oh, he got lucky. His ERA was 2.29, but his expected ERA was 3.79. He's due for some regression. So what did he do? He set a career high in wins with 12, hit the best win-loss percentage in the major leagues at 75% or 750, highest innings pitch of his career, 157.1, the lowest whip, the highest K percentage, the lowest walk percentage, and being an all-star for the first time, and probably would have had better numbers had he not had the line drive to his face, where he came back and pitched in the season when he wasn't expected to. He went 5 innings pitched in 22 out of his 24 starts prior to that incident. So he's as steady as they come. Somebody that rarely gets blown up, and you know you'll get at least a chance for a win most times that he goes out. So I'm putting my name on him. I was very big on Matt Olson. I didn't talk him up a lot on the pods, but I did get a couple shares of him. He cut down his K percentage from 31.4 to 16.8 this year, which is why I think we saw the big change. But Nolan Arenado, a lot of people thought the Coors effect was really going to hamper his value. And look, his numbers aren't the same that you drafted him 3 or 4 years ago as a first round pick. The average dipped to 255, but he still hit 34 homers, 105 RBIs, played 157 out of 162 games. Hard hit percentage was in line with his career average, the highest launch angle of his career. And the Cardinals, I think we saw in the final month, them winning 17 in a row, what it can look like next season. So, you know, where I got him in the fourth round in TGFBI, I think that's a great return.
Yeah, and the fact that you're picking two Oakland A's, basically Eric was all in on the Oakland A's, it sounds like. And
I was very big on Oakland A's, Phillies, and Cardinals.
And the fact that I heard the other day that Matt Olson actually set the MLB record for most home runs against left-handed pitching by a left-handed hitter. He said,
wow.
He had a great season. And I think people were always scared off about the batting average and potential strikeouts there. But I mean, he had a very, very good year. And I always heard a lot of, and this wasn't one analyst, but I heard, I think at least 3 or 4 analysts, maybe even more this offseason, when they would talk about taking the tax that Matt Olson provides. And they're like, hey, you can just get Miguel Sano, you know, at the end of your drafts, and you're going to get the same thing roughly that you're getting from Matt Olson. Well, that proved to not be the case. And Matt Olson showed that he was worth that high draft pick, or that higher draft pick that you took, especially at a thin position like first base, that when we like kind of look into next season, there's, as you kind of get to the back half of the top 10, it's not very many guaranteed good bats there. I think it thins out very quickly. So Matt Olson.
Can I just say one more thing? I think Matt Olson is the type of player where if you play fantasy and you just look at stats, that's one thing. But if you actually watch him play, you can see that his approach is, his swing is better than his numbers look. So that's something where it's like, hey, if he can cut down on his K percentage, because it was 31.4 in 2020, but normally it's around 24-25%. So the fact that he cut it down even more to 16.8 this most recent season, I think just shows the ceiling that he has.
Yeah,
he's just got unbelievable power, right? And it's, I heard that same thing, like, oh, you can get Miguel Sano later. Yeah, Miguel Sano's going to bat 220, guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's totally different. And his upside's different because he's not going to play 150 games. No mm-hmm. chance, right? Like,
exactly.
There's a reason there's a premium on a guy like Olson. And I love that point. It's not just, you can't just look at the stat sheet, right? Because, like, a ton of guys can play 60 games. This was a 162 game season. You had to look at who can play 162 games. We know Matt Olson can play that much. And you watch these guys, it's totally different. Like, Miguel Sano is a strikeout, you know, a strikeout machine. We know that. You watch him, you always think he's going to strike out, right? And it's like, oh, he hit it. Oh, cool. Like, that's just not the way Matt Olson looks when you watch him.
His wrists are very quick, which is something that draws me to him. Like, when he hits a home run, his swing is just very, very quick with it.
Yeah. I'll quickly get to mine, Eric, if you want to pretend like you're hearing this for the first time and actually sound like you're interested.
I'm just muting myself so I don't say anything.
Well, if you've been listening for a long time, there were two guys that I basically touted more than most. These guys were definitely touted, but these were definitely players that I tried to draft as much as I could. The first player being Dylan Cease. He was somebody that I claimed would be a top 30 starting pitcher this year. Going back to talking about the core velocity belt and what that was going to do for the excess torque he was having, and it was helping, obviously, that excess torque was having pitches come out of the strike zone, and that was going to eliminate that to help keep the ball more in the strike zone. Obviously, Dylan Cease had the stuff, he just wasn't able to control it. Well, obviously, while it's still not great, the stuff was a lot more under control this season. He actually, among American League pitchers this season, well, first his stats, 13-7, 3.91 ERA, 13 wins, were tied for third in the American League. He was also third in strikeouts, second in Ks per nine at 12.1. And according to Yahoo, he was the ninth ranked starting pitcher. He looked like the real deal. Obviously, there are some blow up games in there. The 3.91 ERA shows that, but he really looked like he took a step forward, to what we can hopefully expect from being a good frontline starter for this loaded White Sox team. You look at his K percentage, which jumped up from 17.3% to 31.9% this season. Obviously, the walk percentage still is not great. It's above league average, but it dipped from 13.3% to 9.6%. His expected ERA is actually lower than his ERA that he finished with. Exit velocity is right around normal. This is, again, Dylan Cease put it all together this year. He's got a great four-pitch mix, and I was really happy that I made sure I got a bunch of Dylan Cease everywhere, especially in the beginning of when people were doing drafts. He was kind of going near undrafted. Towards the end of draft season, he was getting elevated some, but still he way outperformed his ADP. And I was really happy that I was able to get him as many places as I did. The other one being Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And there was two people in the Vlad camp. You were either in on Vlad or you were out on Vlad. Obviously, he was going as a third, fourth round pick, and people were just like, hey, his launch angle's too bad. He hits too many ground balls. Obviously, that ground ball percentage is a problem. But what I did kind of, and Scott kind of touched on this when he was talking about looking at, you know, weight loss potentially or, you know, changes in guys' swings and approaches, is Vlad underwent stuff that during last season. And I think people thought that Vlad Jr. went from being big to this season all of a sudden changing, but that's not the case. He actually lost 32 pounds throughout last season, and it showed in his overall profile. If you look at the season's first 21 games in 2020, he slashed .222, .292, .383 with four doubles and three homers. The last 39 games he played, he slashed .286, .351, .507, nine doubles, two triples, and six home runs. And one, obviously, the two triple, I don't think he could have legged that out at 282 pounds, which is what he started with at the start of summer camp in 2020. And again, you just, even if you look at his swing, it's a completely different swing. When he starts out the season, it's a lot more stiff, upright. It's kind of like he's hacking at the ball just because he's not athletic and he can't fully get into his swing. But when you look at the end of how he finished his season, it's a lot more athleticism in his swing. There's a lot more plate coverage, adjustability, and bat speed, which obviously is creating a lot more power and force. I think that helped increase his launch angle, get rid of some of the ground balls. And with what I saw at the end of last year, him shedding that weight, I figure it was carrying over to this year to have him be the breakout that he was supposed to be. And I got him in a bunch of places. He actually won me one of Bubba's best ball analyst league. He was one of my picks there. And I had him in our home league. Took me, him and Bichette, as two of my first three picks, took me into the championship. Just didn't pull it out there. But at the end of the day...
Wait. Who'd you lose to?
We're not talking about that. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, Vlad Jr., talking about him next year might be a whole different story as a first round pick, but as a third, fourth round pick, he definitely delivered and then some. Number one player in Roto this season. So those were definitely my two big ones. Scott, I want to go back to you now, because now we got to get sad. We got to get depressing. Debbie Downer time. Let's talk about some of our losses. A couple of players that maybe you were really in on that just did not perform to what you expected. Who are some of those guys?
Yeah, so this isn't a guy that was like super high on my list or whatever, but a guy I took in almost every single draft and that made me feel really, really smart, and I'm probably going to get burned by him again, is Luis Arraez of the Twins.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot resist guys with a huge hit tool, right? So when I see a guy that has, like, you know, if you were to grade it like a 60, 70 hit tool, heck, even a 55, I'm like, yes, give me some of that, right? Because if you can, as long as you can hit the ball, good things can happen, right? That's one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of like a Miguel Sano. Can't hit the ball. Can't hit the, like, a strikeout's always bad, right? But you can make good things on even soft liners. So Luis Arraez is a guy I keep expecting him to take that next step and just drive that ball a little further. I don't see, like, my brain wants to tell me that why can't he be what Jake Cronenworth is now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't get the same lift on the ball, but he just, like, he does actually hit the ball not super hard. Like, his average exit velocity always stinks. But if you watch, he hits a ton of line drives. He hits gaps all the time. But not only could he not stay healthy, he just never has made that next step of turning those line drive singles into line drive doubles. He just hasn't been able to do that yet. And I'm a huge sucker for it. And so, you know, I pick Luis Arraez because he's the most obvious example of these high hit tool guys that can't take the next step. But there's several of them, like, across baseball that I latch onto and just can't let go. He's probably just the one at the top of my mind because I think I drafted him in every major draft that I did.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think, Luis Arraez, you were like, if I need help in batting average, he's a contender to be the AL batting champ. And that's what I was like, you can get batting average late with him and stabilize it. And I think that's a strategy a lot of people used. And definitely did not deliver to what we thought he would. And you said you're going back to him next year, you think, too, right?
Oh, I mean, probably, right? Like, give me a full off season to, like, just look at projections, look at his hit tool. I'll probably fall for it again. I'll be like, yeah, but this time. And I'll, like, pretend to slide him down my list a little because his ADP will be lower than it probably was the last, you know, year or two. So I'm just going to be a sucker for it again, right? Like, hopefully this time it can't actually hurt me. But, like, in more than one league, I expected him to be my middle infielder. Like, several leagues, he was supposed to be my middle infielder, and I was super happy about it. I, in fact, had punted that position early throughout the draft because I was like, I'm going to get my guy Arraez. It's going to be fine. And that can kill
you. It's like a drug. It's like a drug.
It is. And, you know, it's one of these things where we're all going to do this in draft season, and sometimes it works great, and you feel like a genius, and sometimes it works horribly, horribly wrong, and you look like an idiot. But you'll be like, I don't need to pick that spot because I got my guy, right? Mm-hmm. There's people who, like, last year with catcher, they were like, oh, Dalton Varsho, though, he's my guy because I think he can get double-digit home runs, double-digit steals. Didn't work out that way. We saw a lot of good things at the end of the season. But, like, Arraez was one of those guys for me that's going to be my middle infield spot. And in a deep league, like an NFBC-style league, I can ignore middle infield because I'll get him late. And it doesn't sound like much, but that stuff can set you back right away. Especially because I clung to him until, like, June.
It's hard. And I think that's one of the hardest things in this sport, too, is, like, it's such a long season and you're waiting for guys to do something, is knowing when to cut bait with them and knowing, all right, I've had enough. Like, you're not, obviously, it's not happening this year. Or if you do that and then you drop them, and then the last month, like, Garrett Hampson comes to mind a couple of years ago when he went on that home run, stolen base binge at the end of the year. And,
Yeah.
That's why fantasy baseball is such a stressful sport, because it's so long and it's so frustrating. You got to be so involved. And I definitely feel that frustration from Scott. So I feel that right there for sure. Doc, did you want to talk about that you were wrong about here?
So the first guy, and I'm willing to eat this, is Max Scherzer. And I kind of compared him to Roy Halladay. We're going on 36. He came off in 2020, the worst ERA, 3.74, that he had since 2012. The injuries were starting to pile up, some neck issues. And we saw Roy Halladay at age 36 have his worst season in the majors when he had a 6.82 ERA. I didn't think Scherzer would have one nearly that high, but I thought it would be in the high threes, low fours. And what does he do? He comes back in 2021. He has a 15-4 record with a 2.46 ERA. He has the best whip of his career at 0.86. And he just has one of those Max Scherzer stretches with the Dodgers where he looks nearly unhittable. And I certainly thought that the injuries and the innings pitched, leading up to this season, he had thrown 2,400 innings. So I thought that this was going to be the year that he tailed off. I was taking, the Aaron Nolas and the Walker Buehlers ahead of him, but Max Scherzer, once again, probably as consistent as they come when it's starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people that were eating that L, honestly, I definitely did not draft any Max Scherzer this year, and that was one of the ones I was going to bring up as well. Was he the number two starting pitcher behind Corbin Burns? Or I know I guess depends on the scoring, but
I mean, in points league, he was number one.
Yeah. He was absolutely just dominant, looked like his old self. And maybe he's one of those guys that just kind of like you saw with Adam Wainwright this year. Adam Wainwright was, and I know Eric dropped him in his TGFBI league.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
But he's just someone that just seems like he's going to keep doing it. He's going to change his approach and figure out what he needs to do. Scherzer still throws in the mid-90s, and he does give up home runs, but he has been performing really well. And he's on the Dodgers team. Well, he's a free agent now, but after the season, but he was on a Dodgers team that's going to give him offense, and they won all, including last night in the wild card game. They've won all 12 of his starts since he's been with the Dodgers. That's pretty wild. They have not lost since he's took the mound for them. That was one of them. I'll just add another one in here. Jake Diekman was one of my calls I thought he was going to lead the Oakland bullpen. And you looked at his numbers from last year, he was the best reliever in that bullpen. And I thought that he would be one of the best late round guys to get for saves. And I drafted him a lot of teams, and he pretty much just did nothing. And I had to drop him pretty much everywhere.
You were probably really hyped too after the first week when Trevor Rosenthal was out for the season.
I tweeted something about it, and I was like, I hope you listen to me on Jake Diekman.
You were ready to take your victory lap before he even pitched just because of an injury to somebody else.
I mean, to be fair, like Diekman wasn't horrible. Like
he's not bad. He just has stretches where he'll give up like five earned in 0.1 innings.
Yeah, and I think that they like him in certain roles. They liked him in the setup role, and they liked him pitching to lefties. So I get it. Again, it's, he's a lefty, so, it's hard. I feel like unless you're super dominant, a lot of times more lefties not going to be a closer just because of so many right-handed batters that they're going to face. So, again, you look at his slider, had a 121 batting average against this season, and his four-seamer, 244. His two most used pitches were very effective. And, his slider got a 47% whiff rate. So I don't know. Obviously, it didn't work out. And then I'll also throw in, I had Eugenio Suarez in TGFBI this year, and he was absolutely brutal. He was god awful. He did give you a lot of home runs, but didn't give you anything else. Christian Yelich, I know, bit you, Doc.
That wasn't even going to be the guy I took the second L on.
Yeah, but he's another guy that I think people thought might bounce back, and he finished with 9 home runs.
Yeah.
9 home runs, which is mind-boggling to me. Anyway, any last players you guys want to bring up before we close the book on our victory laps and our losses for the 2021 season?
I want to talk about one guy, and I'm cheating a little because this isn't actually a preseason one. But I think it's really important to like adjust while you're in season. And a guy who started out so hot and then everybody discarded was Akil Baddoo. Keel Badu started out, he was this wild free swinger, striking out like 40% of the time, but he hit a couple big home runs, and that was really fun. And then everyone discards him because like, oh, yep, they figured him out. He's striking out. Then the second month of the season, he completely changes his hitting profile. He goes from a 3% walk rate and a 40% strikeout rate to a 24% walk rate and a 24% strikeout rate. It was wild. And like the victory lap doesn't come from like me picking him up originally and holding him the whole time. That would be a terrible idea, right? Because he was pretty much worthless for 3 weeks in terms of fantasy. But you keep watching these guys. If you have a guy that you really like, or that you think there's something there, like I watched his at bats and I was like, I know he's striking out a lot, but there's a lot of athleticism here. I'm starting to see adjustments. I'm watching him in May thinking like, man, these look like better at bats. I then go to the stats. I'm like, oh, cause they are way better. And that's when I was like, okay, now do it. Like, or get him on your watch list now. Right. So, I mean, if I want to talk about preseason L's, it's guys like George Springer. I always fall for this. Like, oh, the injury will get better. And like, if George Springer gives us 130 games, it'll be awesome. And like, yeah, he was good when he played, which was never, right? Right. I got to stop falling for these. Like, what if he plays 140 games? There's so many guys. Like, well, what if he plays 140? I mean, it's going to be the Mondesi problem that everyone's going to have. Well, if he plays 130 games, okay, what if he doesn't? What if he does this? And I mean, how many people kept Mondesi the whole season?
Yeah, that's true.
They got nothing.
I mean, yeah, because you spent such draft capital on him, you're afraid. You're like, if he plays, he's going to win me stolen bases by himself.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to draft him high, hopefully, again.
Well, I want to see where his ADP is after this year. Like,
they came out and said he might not be an everyday player. So I feel like there's no way he can be a top 3-4 round pick anymore, right?
Until someone projects him to steal 70 bases.
That's true.
He's going to be one of those guys, I feel like, that will start out with a low ADP, and then as draft season gets closer and he's playing and he's looks like he's healthy, that he's going to get elevated. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But it's a good point with Akil Badu and the fact that he looked like the season early season story, then he slumped. Many people just were like, all right, this is a flash in the pan. But he made the adjustments, and he really helped out your fantasy team down the stretch. All right, let's get to the fun.
Wait, can I take one more L?
If you want to go, take as many L's as you want, Doc. Go ahead.
I know you'd get a kick out of this. I was really wrong about Hunter Dozier. He was somebody that I got in all of my leagues. Made a finish with a triple slash of 216, 285, 394. And I looked at his 2020 season. He did a career high walk percentage, 14.5%. Went down in 2021 to 7.9. He had the highest K percentage in a full season this year, 28.4%. He had a career high launch angle in 2020. So there was a lot of metrics that were looking good. I also thought he could give you some cheap stolen bases. He had 4 stolen bases in 44 games in 2020. So I thought maybe he'd get in that 10 to 12 range. He had 5 in 144. So just very disappointing. Thought Benintendi would help. I thought a healthy Mondesi, he'd have some more RBI opportunities. But I mean, just... And I mean, he was a later pick, but just somebody that I could have not been more wrong about.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just throw some names out there as well. I know we didn't bring these up, but some guys that if we're talking about L's that I'm sure many people took as well. Jesus Luzardo was one person that everybody was talking about making that next step. He was awful. Aaron Nola was not the pitcher you drafted. I'm not saying people took an L on him, but he definitely did not help you down the stretch. Blake Snell obviously was an L.
I should have taken a W for that one.
Yeah, but Dylan Bundy.
Tyler Anderson.
Dylan Bundy might be the biggest L of the entire season. Anybody that was in on Dylan Bundy immediately was not rewarded for drafting him anywhere. Some hitters, Gleyber Torres, DJ LeMay was a little bit more of an injury. Eddie Rosario really fell off. He had 7 home runs this season. So, I mean, there were a lot of guys.
He was hurt a lot. Plesac.
Plesac. Cody
Jeff
Bellinger.
Jeff McNeil.
Pretty much every Met. Most Mets. That was just like an L, right? Like, people like Dom Smith, they liked, some people were like, oh, but now we can get JD and it'll be great. Like, no, it all worked out terribly, except for Javier Baez. Weirdly enough, that was sort of an L because he had like a what he finished with, like a 220, something like that, like some crazy low batting average. He got the counting stats, but like that was a weird. They're like the they're like the Bizarro Giants in that like everything went wrong instead of everything going right. And they had all these pieces that should have worked out, and then they just didn't. Instead of the Giants, who had like all these pieces that probably shouldn't work out, and then they did.
Yeah. And if you're a Mets fan, I feel like that's just every year. It's just another year, same thing. So glad I'm not a Mets fan. But let's get to the fun part of the show, and let's starting off with the question of the week. Our question of the week is, of course, sponsored by Monkey Knife Fight. Triple Play Fantasy is an official affiliate to Monkey Knife Fight, the fastest growing sports betting site in the United States. New depositors receive 100% instant deposit match up to $100 using promo code Triple Play. So as Nike says, just do it. All right. Our question this week is, if you played in the big leagues and I'm saying you have a three pitch mix that you're attacking hitters with, what's your three pitch mix? So we'll start with Mr. Chu down there. What's your three pitch mix if you're in the big leagues?
So I like to make pitchers in video games that I have, and I refuse to use pitches that are common, even though they're
yes.
good. So yes. It would be a knuckle, right? And I'm not okay. talking like the R.A. Dickey like hard knuckle. I'm talking that Tim Wakefield butterfly.
Oh, that joint that moves around?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I like it.
Like at a smooth like 55 to 60, right? Like I want that pitch. That's okay. got to be in my back pocket. I want a knuckle curve, like that AJ Burnett like knuckle curve.
Ooh, yes.
And then I've never seen this pitch actually work out, and I think I only like it because I want to work out the screwball, like the reverse.
I can't use this now.
Like I want those. They're all so goofy, and I felt like, man, you probably can't do this as a starter for very long. But wouldn't it be so cool to like be this reliever? Because Tim Wakefield was actually a reliever and a closer for a little while. You mm-hmm. come out and like you've been watching these guys all throw like 90, 95, 100. And then I come out just floating crap at you all like all the ninth inning. Like how do you catch up to that? It's like you played real baseball and then had to go like play wiffle ball. Like your timing's way off. I just think it'd be so much fun to just throw absolute junk.
I think so. Yeah, you picked the three. Like there's one pitch I'm glad you didn't say. That's my favorite. Hey,
is it Ephus?
Not the Ephus, but I like that. I mean, you would be the most funky. I feel like you'd have to be a reliever, but you'd be the most funky reliever with that. And they stopped throwing screwballs because of it showing direct like how bad it is for your elbow, right? That's why.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could it not be? Like the way they're getting that ball to move, you're like, ooh, there's some elbow ligaments that you're sacrificing for that kind of spin.
Yeah. But I love that three pitch mix. Have you made a pitcher with those three pitches?
Oh, yeah. It's great because they don't have real ligaments. So you can just do whatever you want.
Somebody gets hurt, you just turn off the game system. They're yeah. back to normal.
Yay! We're all back. But it's great because like you have that Tim Wakefield wind up too. So like everything comes out from like anywhere from like 70 to 50, right? And you've got that Tim Wakefield wind up because you can't do a full wind up if you're throwing that slow knuckle, right? Because it's just too awkward. Your arm speed would be way off. So he would just like stand there, like Bartolo Colon in those commercials when he's pitching to himself, just kind of standing up, like straight yeah. looking at you and just going like this, basically. It was beautiful. Just pulling his arm back and throwing it like he's playing catch. It's awesome.
I love that. I love it. Doc, I know he took one of yours, but what were your pitch mix?
I mean, I'm audibling and I'm picking ones he didn't pick. So the first one, David, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The Craig Kimbrel rising fastball.
Yeah, in his prime.
In his prime. Not even like a Chad Bradford where you have to throw a submarine, it goes up. Like somehow he threw a fastball that had vertical movement on it. So that's going to be my first. The second is going to be a two seam. Got to get a little movement on it. And then I'm throwing a slider. My guy's just throwing gas. It's just, or is he topping out at 99 with his four seam riser? Is he doing 92 with the two seam, or is he hitting 88 with a slider with movement?
I think Craig Kimbrel, when he played for the Braves, I think that's the nastiest I've ever seen a reliever. I remember one of his first outings against the Brewers when he just completely blew them away. And I remember, I think I called you into my room when we lived. This is when we still like were in high school.
Eric, I'm going to make this my Facebook status.
No, I didn't do that.
You did.
I said, Eric, I was like, have you ever seen a reliever this nasty? I was like, this is nuts. I was like, I've never seen someone make someone look like minor league hitters. I was like, this is unbelievable. But yeah, I agree. That was a good mix. So I have the Johan Santana fastball changeup because okay. I loved watching Johan Santana pitch, and that his fastball changeup combo was unreal. Same exact arms, like arm slot, arm angle, movement of his arm. They literally showed it side by side. You could not tell the difference between which pitch he was throwing. And then I'm throwing my favorite pitch in there, and that's the slurve. The slider curveball. Yes. I love the slurve. Yes. Anytime I created a player on MVP Baseball 2004 or 2005, I would always make sure they threw a slurve. And I just think they need to bring it back, because I love that pitch. Slider curveball combo is nasty. And that's definitely going to be in my pitcher's arsenal.
What I love about picking like that circle change from Santana, like when you like are holding a baseball and just playing with your hand, like what are the pitches you always just kind of grip, right? Like you might try to grab like a little knuckleball and like play around with it. I feel like circle change is like one of the first things I do when I grab it. I'm like, oh yeah, it feels like this. And you can just have like the circle change. It's so fun. And it was just nasty. Like Johan, when he was dominant. Oh, like I wasn't watching a ton of baseball when Pedro played. But like, I did get to see Johan throw that just disgusting changeup that everybody looked silly. Like, how did someone not tear their ACL like swinging at that thing? Because they would just put everything they had to hit that gas, and then like they'd be done with their swing, and then they'd hear the like in the catcher's mitt, and just realize they looked like an idiot.
It was that. Was it the 17 strikeout game was against the Rangers that he had that one outing where he just you saw it in full effect. Where he was literally, they didn't know, they weren't waiting on one, it seemed like they didn't know when to swing for the fastball, swing for the changeup. And that was Santana in his prime. And as a Twins fan, I haven't been able to watch a pitcher like him, obviously, since in that organization. But he, that fastball changeup, one of the best combos that I've ever watched, for sure. But
honorable mention to a fork ball, which we didn't name.
Oh, ooh. Good call, Doc. Good
if
call.
I had picked a fastball, it would have been like a split finger, or, you know, because I'm throwing all junk, it'd be that fork. Oh, those are nasty.
Did we miss any besides that? Was there another one? I'm trying to
think. I couldn't think of any.
I mean, there's like a splitter, but I feel like that's
split finger, fork, like they're just different speeds, really. No, because I think we did with like, I like Doc's, like the high, like all the high velocity stuff that just like moves like crazy, like sort of like what I always want Dustin May to be. Right? Yeah. Like just throwing 101, 102, everything moves, everything ducks away, and like no one can touch it.
I'll only last half a season, but that half season will be dirty.
it'll be pure filth. Like the first time we saw like Corbin Burns, like when he came up as a reliever, like that kind of stuff, just everything's gross.
I love that. All right. Let's get to the last segment of the night, and it's gonna be our game of the week. Make sure we don't get copyrighted. I've learned my lesson here. So our game of the week is an old Triple Play favorite. We always bring it back every once in a while. It's called the Twitter follower game. So how it works is you guys are going head to head. I've got 7 of them. So that way there should be one winner decided. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you a name and you have to guess their Twitter following. Whoever is the closest gets the point. And it should be easy since it's just 2 of you, so it shouldn't be too much math on my end. That was not something excelled with in school. The theme is it's playoff edition, so all these players are currently playing in the playoffs right now.
Okay.
All right. Number 1, Gavin Sheets, who is at Clean Sheets 24. Really cool name. So we'll start with Doc first. What's your answer?
9,000.
Scott?
I'm going to go 15,000.
Doc coming in hot, really close, 8,909.
Wow, that is really close.
Yeah,
that was
almost like you cheated.
Nah, I just feel like you would follow Gavin Sheets.
Yeah, all right. Our next one, Shane McClanahan, who is at Sugar_ShaneM. And I'm only reading those two because they had really cool Twitter handles.
Those are other cool ones.
Yeah.
I thought all of his 7 would have cool handles.
No, I wish, but just these two. So we'll start with Scott.
Oh, he's in the majors. He's somewhat well known. I'll go like 13,000.
Doc?
You say he's really well known. He's well known to fantasy baseball people. I don't think your average person knows him. I could do the easy route and go higher, but I'm going to go 11,900.
So you're going under.
I'm going under that.
Well, you were smart to go under. He, believe it or not, he has 4,564 followers.
What?
Yeah. I was shocked too when I saw that. because he's like a really high up and coming name.
I guess it is Tampa, and for whatever reason, they have this great team and nobody cares. So I guess it makes some sense.
Let's remember this conversation, because if they go to the World Series and everybody sees who he is and how nasty he is, I'll bet you that number triples by the end of the postseason.
They might have the best future rotation that people actually don't know about.
Yeah.
Well, like, it seems like everybody knows but the people in Tampa, right? Like, except for the people in Tampa, St. Pete, because they don't care.
Like, your average baseball fan doesn't know Luis Patino, Shane Baz, McClanahan, and they could be like the best rotation in 2 years.
Yeah, a very smart organization with how they're developing pitching there, and they don't pay to keep people like Blake Snell, as you saw. All right, our next player, Zach McKinstry. Doc, how many followers does he have?
I feel like Zach McKinstry probably has more being in LA. I'll say 16-4.
I keep getting burned by these double-digit numbers, so let's see if I can get burned by a single-digit number. I'll say 7,000.
So 16-4 and 7,000. Scott, you're on the board. 10-1.
Yes!
He just crossed the double-digit threshold there. So we got 2-1 game going to question 4. Starting with Scott, Brandon Crawford.
He's been in San Francisco for a long time. People, you know, they love him. There's plenty of people in San Francisco. I'll say like 17,000.
Doc?
38,000.
Well, Doc, you get the point. You both are way off. Believe it or not, Brandon Crawford has 376,300 followers.
You know, good for Brandon Crawford.
He's a borderline celebrity.
I can't imagine what he tweets that gets that much interaction. Jeez.
Yeah, he's got a third of a way to a million. So he's got a big following there. So our next player is Phil Matone, relief pitcher for the Houston Astros. And we're back to Doc, who's got a 3-1 lead.
Where do you come up with these names, David? I was
looking at the Astros lineup, and I was like, "Who?" I was like, "I don't want to do like Correa." I'm trying to do like lesser known guys. I was like, "I don't want to do any."
I like it. I just don't know where you're gonna go with these names.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go 7,500.
7,500, Scott.
See, I keep thinking that like one of these guys is gonna have this like alter internet ego that's like hilarious, or like happens to be like dating like an Instagram model or something that blew up his count. But I don't know if it's this guy because I don't know anything about him. So I'll go 5,000.
And Doc, what did you say?
7,500.
All right, Scott gets the point. He's got 1.5K, which means we all have more followers than Phil Matone. Yay!
Hey.
More than an MLB reliever.
Is he verified?
I'm pretty sure. I have to double check, but I'm pretty sure I remember him being verified when I looked him up. All right, so Doc has a 3-2 lead. Our next player for the Boston Red Sox, Hunter Renfroe. And now back to Scott leading this one off.
Wonder how many people like quickly added him thinking it was the other Hunter Renfroe.
When you Google Hunter, like they both pop up and you're like, this is freaking hilarious that they have it in both.
Just like padding his numbers like a little extra. Someone's like, ah, screw it, I'll just do both of them.
Yeah.
I'll say like 22,000. No, that's so high. I'm gonna lose.
You can change it.
No, I'm keeping it.
All right.
I want to say 44,000.
Oh, so Doc's going higher.
Even higher.
All right. Well, the correct answer is 14.4K. So you way overshot Doc, and Scott is able to reap the benefits. We've got a 3-3 game, which comes down to the decider.
Jeez, I shouldn't have had a 3-1 lead. That's all.
You're about a Golden State Warriors at Doc. Here we go.
I'm telling everyone, a 3-1 lead is never safe.
I start out the last one. For the Milwaukee Brewers, who broke his hand, Devin Williams. Doc, how many followers does he have?
Devin Williams. 11,000.
All right, Scott, for the win.
Man, they had a playoff run, and he was like a big part of that last year.
Scott, don't let him win.
I'm trying, David. I'm going to say 8,000.
You're probably right. It's probably like 7,500.
The correct answer is... Oh, wait, wait, wait. Allow me to fully draw. The correct answer is...
Oh, that means that he won.
8,783 followers. Mr. Scott Chu at the buzzer wins the game.
Just far more winning than I did in my fantasy baseball in 2021. So I'm glad I have this to rest my head on.
And a 3-1 lead too.
I'm trying to tell everyone 3-1 is dangerous.
Relievers will get you too, because like they either like they got some, but like how many did they get? And honestly, I kept waiting for that like one person who, I mean, I guess it was Brandon Crawford, who for no reason has like 10 times like what any of these guys has.
So I actually remember seeing Devin Williams' Twitter like before the season started. He had like 7,000. And I was like, okay, he's definitely going to get more. And when I said 11,000, I was like, it's not like he did really well this season. Like, I definitely overshot it.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had a decent year, but definitely not the rookie of the year type of year that he had in his first year. But on that note, again, Scott with the win, 1-0, taking down the dock. Always a great thing when that happens. But on that note, Scott, thanks so much for coming on the show tonight. It was absolutely a ton of fun for both of us to have you on here. And we really appreciate you giving us your time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it gave me a reason to put on, I don't know if you noticed, my space dinosaur shirt. Because, like, people don't usually see me during the day. Like, other humans don't interact with me besides, like, my kids. So I was like, man, I got to put on my A-plus t-shirt game. Because I feel like if you have a dinosaur t-shirt, like a space dinosaur t-shirt, you wear it every time you think people are going to see you.
I need to get a space dinosaur.
Why else do
dinosaur?
You buy it, right?
I need one now. Now that I see it, I'm missing out. Can you let our followers know, first, where they can find you on Twitter with one of the best names in the Twitter game? And then also all the great stuff you're doing and where they can find your written work, all that good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So you can find me on Twitter at If The Chew Fits. So it's If The C-H-U Fits. When you got a name like Chew, you just use puns constantly,
yeah.
Right? So you can find a lot of my written stuff. It's over at Pitcher List. I managed the Going Deep section there. I actually was writing the batter's box during the season. Over the off season, I'm going to be working on a project where we do a ton of research pieces. Like a ton of stuff where we're going to have some data scientists like dive into numbers. We're going to work on all that stuff. So keep an eye out for that. And otherwise, I'll be doing podcasts over on the Pitcher List podcast network called Hacks and Jacks. We talk mostly about hitters because there's these other nerds at Pitcher List that talk about pitching, I guess. But I mostly talk about hitting. So we'll be doing that every other week during the off season.
Yeah. Great guy. Great follow on Twitter. Does great work if you've not checked him out. Again, make sure you go check out his Twitter page and follow him. He's right at the 2,000 mark. I believe you're just under. Like,
you got more than Phil Matone.
Yes.
So make sure you get to that 2K, man. He needs it. He's a great follow, great analyst, and does great stuff over at Pitcher List. So make sure you're following Scott if you're not already. For everybody that watches or listens to Triple Play Fantasy every week, we appreciate you guys more than you know. And next week, we'll have another great guest, and we'll be diving into some off-season content, so make sure you stay tuned for that fun episode. But until then, everybody stay safe out there, enjoy the playoffs, and we're going to make like a bread truck, and we're going to haul